Blog Talk Radio.
In case you didn't realize that. And I'm going to bring on my guest in a few minutes, Charles Krueger, the famous labor lawyer, friend of the Recruiting Animal family. But first I want to talk about some dumb bunny recruiters I've encountered recently, just so you know what not to do. Because I'm a recruiting expert. Well, I mean, I'm a blogging expert. I'm a recruiting blogging expert, and here it goes. J.D. Jason Davis called me up the other day, and he said, you got to read an article by a woman named Lorraine Makepeace. Nice name. Nice name. So I checked out her blog, and I found that it's called It's the Talent Stupid. It's the Talent Stupid. That's the first thing I saw when I went there. And I got to ask you, why am I stupid? Why? Because I went to her stupid site? Is that why I'm stupid? Well, let me tell you, how smart is it to name your site It's the Talent Stupid? You're calling your readers stupid before they even had a chance to see how you are. Well, I'm going to tell you, Lorraine, I'm not stupid. You're stupid because you gave your blog that stupid title. Free advice. I won't charge you. I'm not Mike Raymer. I'm not Bill Boorman. I'm not even Charles Krueger. That's for free. And Charles is going to give free advice, too. Don't worry about that. But I got another beef with another swell blogger. This guy's name is Chris Fernandi, and his blog is called Renegade HR. And he had a posting a couple of weeks ago called Be Like Gandhi. Be like Gandhi. Everybody likes Gandhi. But Gandhi was an egomaniac. I know a lot about Gandhi. Anyway, in this blog, Chris tells you, whenever someone does something awesome, you tell him that he's done it. Compliment him. Then email his boss to let him know and CC the guy you're complimenting. In other words, he's saying, be like Gandhi. Suck up. Suck up. But, you know, I told you I know something about Gandhi, so I told Chris, that's not Gandhi. Gandhi didn't tell you to suck up like that. That's Dale Carnegie. So Chris writes back, listen, animal, you're missing the point. And then he says to me, listen, would Gandhi actually manage people the way I'm telling you to? Maybe not, but that doesn't matter. Gandhi is still a perfect analogy. I don't know where he got that word, analogy instead of example. Gandhi is a perfect analogy for my article. Does that make sense to you? Gandhi wouldn't have said that, but he's a perfect example. No, Chris, no, I'm not wrong. You're wrong. Now, anyway, I got more to say about stupid bloggers, but I won't say it now. I'm going to move on. My guest, I told you, is the famous labor lawyer, Charles Krueger, Krugel. You got a hard name, Charles, from Chicago. He's a respected member, as I said, of the Recruiting Animal family, because the last time he was here, he was pretty good, and he better be just as good today, or I'm going to be mad! Anyway, let's get to him. Jerry Jeff Lipschultz, can you tell us what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal Show!
Okay, I'm back. I don't know. I feel kind of flat today. Charles, are you there?
I'm there. My ears are bleeding.
Oh, you know what? I'm on a bad line. I thought I had a shout. I'm sorry. I could have done it lower. You know, I wrecked my voice singing. I'm not singing, shouting on this show, and now I can't sing properly, but we're going to sing right now. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay, you're not a chicken, I know, because you're a lawyer, and we're going to sing I Fought the Law. Do you know that song?
Sure, The Clash and Bob Marley.
I don't know that version of it. I mean, this is the Bobby Fuller 4. Breakin' rocks in the hot sun. Is that the same one?
Yeah, I fought the on the wall one.
Okay, so we'll sing it. We're going to only sing the first verse. I'm breaking rocks in the hot sun. I fought the law on the wall one. Then I needed money because I had none.
And,
I fought the law on the wall one.
Yeah, I fought the law one.
Yeah, there's a lot of people here. Is anybody else going to sing? Maureen, you're in, right?
I'll sing.
You know that song, right, Maureen?
I know the song.
Okay, Jerry Jeff?
I'm here for you, man.
Are you going to sing or not? Is that
yeah,
a comment?
Yeah, why not? Sure.
Okay. Jerry Albright, are you going to sing?
Maybe.
You chicken.
I'm busy.
Are you going to sing?
No.
Yeah.
The military man. Look at the big macho guy, Jerry, who could fight with Mike Raymer for 90 minutes. He can't sing. Okay. One, two, three. I'm breaking rocks
in the hot sun.
I fought the law and the
law one.
I fought the
law and the law one.
I needed money
because
I had
none.
I fought the law and the law one.
The law
and the law one.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for trying.
No
wonder those guys didn't sing. Okay, Charles, before we get going, and this is a show that's going to be jam-packed with wonderful information, I just know it. We want to do a little promo for you. What's the name of your website, your blog?
Sure, it's Charles A. Krugel, KRUGEL.com.
Krugel. You know, I think someone actually did make a search engine called Krugel, by the way. You made a mistake by not grabbing that. So Charles A. KRUGEL.com, and you've got some big engagements coming up in the near future. Want to tell us a bit about those?
Sure. I'm being interviewed tomorrow on a TV show, a live internet TV program, probationchallenge.org. That'll be in Chicago coming up.
Probation Challenge? Hold on. You say probationchallenge.org?
Yeah, that's the name of the station or the that's the name of the institution that runs this all these programs. And the actual program itself is called the McNeil Notebook.
McNeil Notebook. Can everybody hear Charles? He sounds pretty faint to me.
Well, I can hear him just fine.
He sounds great.
He sounds great. Okay. Yeah. You guys always say that.
September.
Okay, you look bad. So what else are you doing?
Yeah, in September I'm presenting a seminar on recruiting issues, legal recruiting issues involved in social networking, online communications, and that's for the University of Illinois systems.
Okay, and you told me that the University of Illinois is currently, are they being actually charged or just investigated for nepotism and cronyism?
Yeah, investigated. There's a whole big investigation involved with employment and student admittance, admitting students into their various programs.
You know what? If I give $1 million to a university, they better take my kid, even if he's stupid. Don't you think so? Don't I have a right?
Well, this is a public university, so it's a little bit different.
Don't they still take money from donors?
Yeah. Yep, that's right.
Okay.
Supposed to be no strings attached.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment on that? Anybody else think that's wrong?
It's just a big political action here in Illinois. It sucks.
Yeah.
Our state's terrible.
Your state's terrible. That's where the president comes from, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. Speaking of Chicago culture or whatever it is, I got a question. The big question for us today is rousing, but I want to put that off a bit. Just, you know. Does anyone want to say hi? There's not that many people here. Anyone want to say hi to Charles?
Hi, Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Charles.
Hi, Charles.
Okay. Well, you know, we got just a minute. We'll just go through a few of these people. Area code 281, who are you? Don't have to say. 770, Carl Chapman, CEC Search, the recruiting Rottweiler. You've been here before to talk to Charles, right?
I have.
Okay. Area code 312, who's that?
Matt Jones.
Matt Jones, 23?
Matthew Jones,
you're giving out your own information about how people should communicate with me on Twitter. I saw it. Don't think I didn't, okay? Jerry Albright, you know our friend Charles as well. Want to say hi?
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. Hi, Jerry's got a funny voice today. I don't think it's really him. Maureen, want to say hi to Charles?
Hey, Charles, how are you?
Pretty good,
okay,
Maureen. How are you doing?
Yeah, okay. Don't
Thanks
talk.
For coming
right.
on.
Where are you? 111. Somebody else.
That's 3M.
Rayanne, say hi to Charles.
Hi.
Hi.
Rayanne doesn't have a website. Can't give it up. Maureen is TechTrack, you'll never spell it, .com, namesourcer.com. Area code 817, who's that?
That's Lipschultz. Jeff Lipschultz.
Jerry Jeff Lipschultz. So there's another 312. Who's that?
That's probably me.
Oh, you're 312. Okay. And then 512.
Christine.
512. Erico 512 wants to say hi to Charles. No? Okay. Where is that, Maureen? Where's 512?
Is that Austin?
That's Austin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyway, okay, so Charles, let me ask you something. All the sophisticated recruiters, they're always saying you have to find a candidate who's a fit. And by fit, they mean a cultural fit. They're always talking about culture, okay? So if you interview somebody, either a recruiter or an employer interviews a candidate and decides this person doesn't have the right culture for the firm, can the candidate sue?
Technically, they could sue on that, but they're not going to win.
Why not?
They'll need to be a member of protected class more so than just saying it's a matter of culture.
Okay, so there's actually a protected class?
I'm on the phone. Hang up.
Hey, who's fighting
Animal,
your family?
There's seven protected classes.
Hello?
Who are they?
You know that.
I don't
there's
know.
At least seven.
Okay, I'm in Canada. We don't have protected classes here. Okay, so there's
you
a
can discriminate against women based on sex, sexual
uh-huh.
orientation,
yeah.
religion,
man.
National origin. You can
yeah.
discriminate.
I'm moving. I'm on my way.
Sexual orientation, by the way, isn't a federally recognized class yet. So
okay, Charles told me he doesn't mind the guys yelling at him. He doesn't mind them criticizing him, but he's a lawyer. He's used to a courtroom where the judge gives him a little bit of a chance to talk before we interrupt, okay? Charles, if somebody, like, if you say I've got a macho culture here, we yell at people and all kinds of stuff, and we think you're too sensitive to fit in, is that illegal?
No.
No?
That's not illegal.
What if I put pictures of from Playboy on the wall? I know that's illegal. Somebody could say that's sexual harassment, right?
Well, they could say sexual harassment, whether or not it probably is illegal in the sexual harassment context, but you really have to – it's a case-by-case basis in terms of analyzing whether or not it becomes a hostile environment. So, for example, if somebody says to you, take those down, I find them offensive, and you take them down, that's probably not sexual harassment then. It's unprofessional, but it wouldn't cross the line of being illegal.
That.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's my company culture. What if you say, I don't want to work for Canadians. They're too polite. We like only aggressive American salespeople here. Is that bigotry?
Probably, yeah. That'd be possibly national origin discrimination.
Really? So isn't that a fine line, you know, because a national culture you can't reject, but other kinds of personality cultures you can reject. Is that right?
Yeah, and technically, even some research I've seen, empirical research, actually shows that culture or fit is one of the biggest predictors, or personality is one of the biggest predictors of success in the workplace.
Okay, but you can't associate that with any kind of group.
You can only be
as an individual.
Yeah, basically you can't. You have to avoid any sort of disparate impact or differential treatment is what it amounts to.
Okay, but what if I say I don't want to hire introverts? You know, I don't think they're going to fit in here. Isn't that prejudice against a whole class of people?
Against introverts, yeah, but that's not necessarily legal. That would if you could attach it to a protected class, then it would be illegal.
If somebody's ugly?
Yeah, you could discriminate on the basis of physical appearance.
It's legal?
Yeah.
So that's not a protected class, people who aren't good looking.
Yeah, it's not a protected class.
Charles,
okay,
could you maybe tell us what the protected classes are, just so
yeah,
we can brief run down?
Yeah, you have race, gender, national origin, religion, age being 40 years old and older. Sexuality or sexual orientation is not federally recognized, but it's recognized by a lot of states and local municipalities. There's also disability, military status, and gender, I think I already said. And those are the basic ones. Those are the basic protected classes.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you could if someone's got a criminal degree, criminal record, you can say that person's not suitable, right? You can
if
discriminate on that basis.
Well, that depends state by state, but for the most part, like in Illinois, If you're basing on an arrest record, no, you can't discriminate on the basis of an arrest record. You could be discriminate on the basis of conviction, a criminal conviction, yeah.
Okay, arrest record because it doesn't mean they weren't proven guilty. Is that the reason there?
Yeah, that's the reason. Also, there is some studies that have shown disparate impact against various minorities based on arrest, you know, the whole racial
profiling.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, that makes kind of sense. Does that make sense to everybody, the arrest records shouldn't count? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mind you, I still got to say, if you're talking about culture, I mean, let's say certain nationalities, I notice they're not from the United States or North America, they give you a really limp-wristed handshake, even the macho guys. They just don't like shaking hands. And you could say, I don't want to hire them because of that reason?
Yeah, you could.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank goodness.
The Maureen's got a question, but I'll read it for you. Is that okay, Maureen?
That's fine.
If you're a recruiter and you're looking for IT people and you find two names in a company, one person's named Charles Kang or Wong, a Chinese name, and the other's named Bridget Murphy, okay? And you pick the Chinese name as your first person to go because there's a lot of you have decided from your personal experience there's a lot of Chinese people in IT. So you
and
think
Bridget's are kind of airheads anyway.
Wow.
Yes, Carl.
Wow.
I like
Charles.
It, Jerry. I like it.
Charles,
okay,
are you allowed to recruit Charles Kang first?
I would advise against that. Legally, we may be able to get away with it if it's only down to two applicants. But if what you're talking about is basically something that's going to impact disparately or differentially treat people on the basis of their gender or race or national origin in this case, which is what the name implies, something along those lines, race, national origin, or gender or race, sex, I mean, then you could be getting yourself into trouble. And
they're both protected classes, so how do you choose who goes first?
Well, that's part of the problem. I mean, the law is not clear on this.
Are we talking about calling these people to recruit them or to consider their application, which is a little further down the line?
No, let's say Maureen has sourced a bunch of people, and she's handed them over to me, the recruiter. I take a look at those names, and it's for an IT manager's job. And I say, hey, the first person I'm going to call is Charles Kang because he's probably a good IT person, right? Even if Bridget's in, maybe she's not as hot as him because she's not Chinese.
Neither of the two have applied then.
No, it's recruiting passive candidates.
Yeah, well, that's – discrimination wouldn't apply to just making phone calls, would it, Charles, or would it?
Probably
you've got
not.
A pattern
most likely
of choosing
not.
One nationality.
If you have
Sorry,
a pattern
Charles.
Of it, you could end up in trouble, yeah.
But,
the problem is that, and like I said, the law is not clear on this, and part of the problem is that we've seen this now in a rise in the Richie versus DeStefano, the New Haven firefighters case, where they went through all these gymnastic analysis regarding testing and assessment and how do you exclude one class over another. So
are we assuming in this scenario that both of these people are equally qualified? I mean, if we look, you could look at those two resumes and say, I picked
no,
this
we don't
guy
know.
Over her for lots of other reasons.
We've only
you're
got the names
the
at this point.
If you're able to articulate another reason for disqualifying one over the other, then yeah, you're okay. Well, a legitimate reason.
I mean, how would they
you
know
you
picked
really
because
careful.
Of a name?
The name thing, I have a friend who's black and her last name is Hernandez.
Yeah, so what?
She's not really black.
She's Dominican.
Is she an IT? Is she an IT?
Yes.
She's
no.
as black as Obama is, which is
hey. Okay.
Wow.
This show is going to get sued.
You better watch this. Everybody better watch this step on the show. I don't want to get in any kind
of
trouble.
Freedom
I
only
stated a fact. Well, we can't even say facts
freedom
anymore.
Yeah, well, it depends
speech.
How you edge
not
it, okay?
Black.
Okay, I don't want to talk about Obama, okay? I'll
you know he's listening.
Get me sued.
Yeah, you know he's listening. You owe me $700, buddy.
Maureen.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Maureen,
I'm here.
Do you want to ask Charles that question? Did I explain it
Do
well?
Do I want to what?
Something I missed. There's something I missed.
Well, you asked about
Charles
recruiting. Our conversation on Magic Method was about sourcing.
So ask
if
him.
You
go ahead.
Okay, so I'm stabbing in. Do you know what stabbing is, Charles?
No, he doesn't know. He's a lawyer,
okay.
Not a sorcerer.
Charles, when I don't have any names at a company and I can't get anything out of the receptionist, sometimes I'm reduced to stabbing in, which means I find the internal dial of a company and I just start calling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, number to number to number, and usually numerically. And let's say I do it at night and I pick 50 names, right? And
mm-hmm.
there's a Charles Tang on 4567, and there is a Bridget Maloney on 4568. I'm looking for ASIC design engineers. From my experience, I know that there are...
Sorry.
Who's laughing?
I'm laughing, too.
That would be Jerry.
But silently. Go ahead, Maureen.
Okay, from my experience, I know that there are usually a lot of ASIC design engineers that hold Asian names.
Mm-hmm.
So I call Charles Kang first in an effort to find out who his group members are. If, in fact, he turns out to be an ASIC design engineer, he may not turn out to be an ASIC design engineer.
He's not the admin assistant, though.
He's not the admin assistant. He's somebody, he's an employee.
Is.
I'm sorry?
What?
I consider that, let me just say one thing, I consider that a moot question. That's why I changed your question, because no one can ever
okay.
find out what you're doing in that case. But if you're actually recruiting people and you're making a preferential choice based on name, I don't know how they would figure it out, but they might see that, you know, most of the people in your database are Chinese or something like that. I don't know how they do it.
And that's
but,
probably not illegal either in terms of just the stabbing aspect of it, just reaching out like that.
Okay. I'm reaching out. I'm seeking information. I'm not
yeah.
offering jobs to anybody. I'm not, you know, I'm using the odds in my favor to garner information based on my own past experience.
But the problem is that ultimately, if the population you bring is completely is homogenous enough that it's having a differential or disparate impact against certain protected classes, it possibly could be illegal. It could be part of that an illegal process.
If I only brought Asian names or only brought female names or only brought white
or if
male
they were
names.
The only ones hired, yeah. It could also extend, you know, you may have to extend the test or the analysis to who's hired.
Mm-hmm.
So the key in there is the disproportionate part, right? Because if you're hiring certain for a certain job, there's going to be a large portion of people in that job that might be from a certain one of those classes. Right?
Yeah,
right,
it depends on... Yeah, and it's going to be a multi-factored analysis in terms of how they where your feelers are going out to. I mean, if you're going into one company doing a stabbing thing like in the one company, and you're not using that company or you're not choosing that company on the basis that you know of some stereotype that you know there's a lot of Asians there, some other class of people there, then you should be okay. If you're calling that company only because you know there's a lot of Asians there, and ultimately you end up hiring only Asians, or you end up providing that company, your client, with a population that's 100% or 99% Asian, and that's mm-hmm. where they end up hiring, ultimately you could end up in trouble.
That sounds hard to prove. That
I don't
sounds
believe
hard to
it.
Prove.
I don't believe you could get in trouble for doing that.
Because they're all Asians. Who's gonna know that I know or
well,
don't know that?
From a practical standpoint, you're right. From a practical standpoint, in terms of actually finding it out, finding the evidence to attach to this whole process, you're right. It's gonna be very difficult.
What if your company's name was Smart Asians Staffing Only? I mean, would that be an indicator?
Hey Jerry, we have to open that company in Canada.
Yeah.
There is an exception, by the way, called and you guys are probably familiar with this, bona fide occupational qualifications, BFOQ. It's a pretty tight exception, very narrow, where you can make a justification for excluding other protected classes in favor and only involving or including one protected class. It happens with a lot of religious organizations or race-based organizations.
What does that mean exactly? Can you give us an example? I don't know. I never understand these generalities.
If the Nation of Islam is recruiting for an executive director, you know, somebody to replace Louis Farrakhan or something like that, being Muslim or black can be a bona fide occupational qualification. If you're, you know, a rabbi for a temple, a synagogue, being Jewish could be a qualification.
This is a legitimate question. What about, like, in, say, a Chinese restaurant?
More about diversity than they are now.
That would be a difficult one to make. a difficult leap to make, okay. Unless you're hiring basically family members or something like that. But from a practical standpoint, again, you're going to have a lot of problems of proof. But it's from a legal standpoint, it is a difficult argument to make that you have to have only Chinese people working as waiters, waitresses, or bussing tables in a Chinese restaurant.
What if your clientele is primarily Chinese? We've got a Chinatown here. It's Chinese people like eating at Chinese restaurants. Lots of them are new immigrants. A language could be a requirement, right?
That could be a requirement. Yeah, you could. That's legal. And also, if you're hiring from the general population from within that area, so if you're hiring from within Chinatown only, basically, you could possibly legally exclude other protected classes.
But that language is the key there, because it's not race driven. It's just you have to know the language. It could be anybody.
Yeah, and also potentially the demographic breakdown of the area itself. But if you're excluding people,
is somebody on a speakerphone? Sorry, Charles, get off the speakerphone, will you? Pick up the phone. It's still like you're in a tunnel. Okay, you continue, Charles.
So, I've seen it happen the other way around, though, where a company will hire from basically one demographic within an area, and it's the demographic or the class of people they're hiring is representative of a majority of that area, but then they end up excluding other classes, and they're found legally liable, guilty for discrimination. So, it's a case-by-case analysis, and it cuts both ways, but there are ways of legally justifying excluding other classes, on the basis of language, let's say, or the demographics of an area.
Are there any lawyers on today? Go ahead, Rayanne.
I just have a comment and then maybe a question. I received a recruitment request a while back that I help hire a president for a company, but it had to be a woman. So I was able to do it and had no problems with it, but I'm just wondering what are the legalities of that?
I'll visit you in prison.
Well, it's not a criminal act, by the way, but in terms of the civil liability, that is a sticky situation. It's a tough one. Basically, maybe if they're under some sort of affirmative action program where there's almost like a mandate that they have to hire a female president or a female.
No, it was for a company that was producing products for women, and the owner of the company just thought it would be better image if the president was a woman.
Well, there, you could possibly make a bona fide occupational qualification argument, but again, it's a very narrow exception. And the guy who just chimed in about discrimination, he may be right. He may be right about that. There may be discrimination.
That was Carl Chapman, CEC, okay. Surge.
Thanks,
that's
Carl.
Exactly right. I said it because Jerry was thinking it.
What's the hottest, or what's the law that's broken most with regards to, well, I guess we're talking about discrimination right now. What's broken most?
Age is a hot issue right now because of the aging baby boomer population.
Have you had any cases that you had to handle personally?
Yeah, I've had cases.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah, basically somebody claims that they're being excluded for a position or a promotion on the basis of age, and you have to basically do a breakdown, an internal analysis of that position itself, the department, the people being considered for the promotion. And then you may have to justify it before an agency like the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. More often, age is a really difficult one to prove from the plaintiff side. So more often, I've never lost an age case.
But how did you win them? Like, what do you have to do? I don't understand. You charge, you make a charge against the company that this person was turned down, and do they have to? Does the employer have to release all their hiring records to you?
Yeah. They basically have to release all their hiring records. I'll go, it depends on the size of the company, but I've done it where basically we've taken the whole plant, 150 or so employees, and I did this in California, which is very liberal, and we basically gave them everything, but then, I basically walked them through it. So I'm not just giving them everything and just leaving it on their desk saying, here, you make sense of it. I'm walking them through it. And in this one case, fortunately, the plaintiff himself made a lot of errors in describing his case, even to the extent that he was claiming some disability stuff, and his doctor describing the disability actually gave the wrong birth date. date of birth. So he actually said the guy was under the age of 40. And I pointed out, look, we're going to acknowledge he's over the age of 40. I stipulated to that fact. But the point is, the guy's making a lot of factual misstatements here. Isn't it possible that it's not an issue of age discrimination? It's really just a matter of he just doesn't know what he's doing. And we
okay,
won.
But what? Why don't you pick a case? Well, come on. Why don't you pick a case where there really is age discrimination, so there weren't any extraneous issues? Tell us what happened.
Basically, if you can't prove age discrimination, I mean, we've
how
I've
do you
had
prove
cases,
it? Give us a case where you proved it. Did you ever prove it?
Oh no, I've never proved it. I defend companies.
Oh, okay.
And I've never
on
seen.
The other
I've never seen.
He's the other side of the fence. I have a question for Charles.
Well, let him finish. He said he has to finish once he starts. Go ahead,
yeah,
Charles.
I've just never seen approved in a case I've been involved in.
So you're saying that it's very that it's a common charge, but it's very unlikely to succeed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's very unlikely to succeed. You're going to have to bring up a class of people, really more so than just one individual person claiming age discrimination. You're going to need to show some sort of disparate impact or differential treatment of a whole class of people 40 and older.
So it's like when the stewardesses couldn't be, I don't know, over 30 or whatever it was.
Allstate Insurance had an issue involving that, trying to get rid of insurance agents and make them independent contractors. So there was a whole issue involved with that. They were doing this only to people 40 and older.
And so a class of people, there was a group action. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was a group action.
Okay.
I believe it was certified. I don't remember what happened, what the ultimate result was, but I do believe it proceeded through litigation.
Okay, Rayanne?
Yeah, so jumping back to my comment, if a client or a hiring manager approaches you and asks specifically, when I worked for an executive search firm that dealt in healthcare search only, we used to get this comment, and I know it sounds crude, but all the time the managing director at our office would say, we're looking for somebody that stands to pee. So obviously he wasn't saying, we're only looking at men, only recruit men, but he was going around it by saying his crude comment. And I always felt uncomfortable knowing that, you know, that was that type of discrimination was going to be taking place. But how do you tell a client or a hiring manager, hey, I'm not comfortable with that, or are you sure that's, I mean, especially when you run the chance of losing that client by not finding the person they want, but by not finding the fit that they want.
In
so
that
what's the best way to go about that?
In that situation, you may have to bite the bullet and lose the client so you don't end up losing your license or your means of making a living, because, you know, what that guy's saying is basically it's just flatly discriminatory. You know, I would kind of like probably sarcastically say, well, how about a hermaphrodite? But, you know, I don't know what he would, you know, what his response would be then. But, you know, that's just a nasty situation, and I just would not have anything to do with that.
Well,
I agree with Charles.
I mean,
I'm sorry. I was going to give you some wording. I've had to deal with that a number of times as a recruiter. You just basically say, what you're asking me to do is to discriminate against a protected class. I can't do that. It's against the law.
And you may want to suggest to the person, why don't you consult your general counsel or consult an attorney about this? Because I have a feeling you're going to be, you know, it's better if I save your butt now as a company than after the fact, or you scrounge up some recruiter, any recruiter off the street who's going to do this for you because they need a quick buck, and then you end up losing a lot more money, you know, a year from now.
Well, what if they come to you with a history of, you know, say an X-ray department that they've had a history of trouble with women running the department, and so they really just want a guy to run the department. It ran smoothly 10 years ago when a guy was running it, and the last 10 years it's just been horrible because a woman running the department just didn't work. So how do you find something?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the same sort of rationale.
Okay.
It's probably illegal, and the fact of the matter is, how do you know it wasn't something else besides just them being women? Maybe it was the location of the office they were in or something like that.
Yeah, that's telling me that there's a lot more
discrimination.
Yeah.
Pardon me, Carl? What did you say?
I said that they're just rationalizing discrimination.
Yeah.
You can't do that. It's wrong.
Everybody discriminates. I mean, you could bring them down to the last two, and you're interviewing. One's a man, one's a woman. And you don't have to say why you hired the man, but in the end, it was probably because of the man. So that's not really something you can even prove.
Well, I mean, and if you basically say, well, it was based on the man having a Harvard MBA versus the woman who had Schmuckville University MBA, you know, so on that basis alone, you'd be okay because even though it discriminated, potentially discriminated against one gender, you had a legitimate reason otherwise.
Although those two universities are often confused with each other.
Yeah.
No swearing on this show, Charles. Can you say, Charles? Can you say hi to Carrie Kari Quas? She says hello to you on via Twitter. Can you say hi to her?
Sure. Hi, Carrie. How are you doing?
Okay, great. Thanks. Just want to make her feel good. She's a regular listener. Does anybody else have a question based on personal experience for Charles? Like you could do some curbside legal consulting?
Yeah.
No. Nobody else. Okay. Now, Charles, social networking. Want to tell us a bit about what you're going to talk about at that conference or lecture you're giving at the University of Illinois?
Yeah, it's a hot topic now, I guess, using Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, LinkedIn, these various and emails and all that, using these various online networking and communication sites for recruiting and hiring people. So I guess the issue becomes, you know, what can you use? What information can you use from that? What if a person says this is my private site and they're not meaning it for public consumption? Can a recruiter or a company use that to exclude them from employment? And those are going to be some of the issues I'm going to be touching on.
So what do lawyers say about those things?
Specifically, if you find something that's very concerning to you on their Facebook page, can you or can you not use that information to make a decision on whether or not to recruit that person?
You can, and even if they say they intended that it tended to be private, the fact that it's not private now is still grounds, legal and legitimate grounds for excluding them. If, however, you hack into a password protected site of theirs and use that against them, you're on shakier ground. You're on shakier legal ground.
Okay. What if you're on Facebook or something like that, and their site, their page is clean, but you look at their friends' pages, and their friends are all, you know, party animals, and there's lots of picture of them, you know, drunk or, you know, partially
gay.
I don't know. That's another issue. But let's say you see their friends and you don't like their buddies, even though their site has nothing offensive or that either makes you uncomfortable. What about that?
That's probably not illegal, too, but if it has the tendency to disparately impact against a protected class, and you could prove that. So basically, if you're going to exclude 50 minorities not because they themselves are minorities, chances are you're going to get away with it as an employer, but if somehow you can make that leap, that jump to the actual proof showing that all 50 people excluded were minorities and it was because they associate with minorities, too. Based on your Facebook or MySpace analyses, you're probably going to end up in some trouble as an employer. But
well, you used the word probably quite a bit in that one. I'm not comfortable.
Yeah. I know. I'm sorry to sound like the typical weasel attorney, but that's probably the best analysis I could give of that scenario. It's from a proof analysis, from a case-by-case of proof analysis, it's going to be really difficult to prove, but you're probably and also the law still isn't really clear on the association part of it. So these are public associations. They're known to the public. It's legitimate to exclude on that. If, for example, you have a photo of you, shaking hands with Al Capone, or some, reputed criminal, and you exclude somebody on the basis of that, that's fine. That's legal.
Really?
Yeah, if you're
what if he's your cousin? What if he's your cousin?
Yeah, still, though, I mean, if you're concerned about the public image of it, and there's no other... there's no other reason attached to it other than the public relations image of it. That's probably illegal. You're probably going to.
So let's say you were my cousin and you're a Chicago gangster,
mm-hmm.
whatever, and somebody takes a picture of us at a family wedding, and that's up on Facebook, and they say, oh, look, the recruiting animal sitting beside Charles Krueger, the notorious Charles Krueger. Can they rule me out?
Yeah, they could do that and get away with it.
Really?
You're not gonna. If it's not password protected and all that, you should be able to get away with that.
Okay. Kari says thanks. She's doing great. She just wanted you to know. Okay. Anybody else? on that social networking stuff? No? Okay.
There's no laws, by the way, that segregate social networking sites from other, like making them different from email or printed advertisements or anything like that. Basically, it's the same thing.
Hmm. Okay. Well, if you happen to be visiting, someone happened to be visiting one of our other cousins and was thinking of hiring me and saw that picture at their home, they'd still be able to rule me out. It doesn't matter where they get a hold of it. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fine. Okay, now what about ruse calls? If I'm looking for an HR generalist and I call up a company and say to the receptionist, you know what, I'm trying to get in touch with an HR generalist in your company. I'm not sure of her name. She left her bra in my car last night and I'd like to return it to her. You know, can you just run the names by me, the people in the department? You know? And she says, we don't have any women in that department. You said, well, maybe somebody likes to dress up in drag. Who's there?
Animal, I thought you framed those. You wouldn't return it, would you?
I'm that hard up. Yeah, okay. So, Charles, what about that? If I call, and I never really had her in my car. I never really had that girl in my car.
The story's worth its weight in gold.
Animal.
Or any girl, for that matter.
Yeah, okay, right. So, what is that illegal? If I say I'm talking to somebody from your company, and really the reason I'm calling, once I'm in touch with her, I'd like to ask her if she might be interested in another position.
Probably not.
What is
it's probably not illegal. And you know, we went through this. We've gone through all these gyrations on the internet and stuff, and I still can't find any law that says calling to get past the gatekeeper or rusing to get past the gatekeeper just to talk to somebody about a position. Is absolutely illegal. People, I know they've cited the Federal Trade Commission rules and FCC rules and stuff, but I can't find anything about rusing falling into that pattern. They talk about in terms of intellectual property or company property or anything like that.
Who's that?
Wait. Are you saying rusing is legal?
It's legal in that regard. It only becomes illegal if you're basically trying to defraud the company out of money. And I emphasize the word defraud. You're trying to defraud them out of something of value or something that they value and protect, that they've actually taken steps to protect through some sort of non-competition agreement or confidentiality agreement, being an employee there, or some sort of intellectual property rights like trademark or copyright protection. Or money.
Can you write a post on that? I know there's a few people that would be really interested in reading about that, and I'm sure arguing with you.
I have the post.
Face,
yeah, the post. It's already up on my website from March 2009.
So, actually, Charles, can you go through some of the issues, specific ones that were raised? I know you told me you did a printout of that long discussion. Can you just say,
yeah,
this is what was given to me, I checked it out, and this is the result. This is what was given to me. I checked it out. I want you to just run through each, you know, blow by blow. Can you do that? Like you actually told me yesterday about
a
number of these.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For example, somebody wrote, ruse calling is misrepresenting oneself in business. That's true. It is considered fraud. That's not true. Fraud and deceit in business, especially when you have the FTC, FCC, and state laws combined with interstate commerce. Yes, Virginia, there are laws that do supersede the beliefs of some. Well, that's a mixture of
I don't understand what you just said. Can you, what did you just say?
The person was mixing law and different fact patterns, taking fact patterns out of context to equate it to fraud. Basically, ruse calling, pure and simple, just to get past the gatekeepers, not fraud. Ruse calling falls under federal law via the Federal Trade Commission. I'm reading this. That's not really true unless you're defrauding the company out of something that they protected or some money or, you know, something that they've caught.
But what about if you're rusing to take them out of property that is intellectual, their people, their talent?
No, that's not intellectual property. They don't own the people.
Well, the only way they would own the people is if they had some sort of non-compete or non-solicitation or confidentiality agreement that bounds that individual to the company or binds them they have to basically comply to some sort of reporting procedure, and then they don't. But the ruser may not be the one liable in that situation. It could be an employee who's liable.
It's most likely that the ruser is not liable because I'm not party to the contract.
Yeah.
Right,
the ruser could be liable or could be a party if they become aware of the contract, and they're basically a party to the fraud itself. Then it's possible the ruser could be liable. By the way, I couldn't find any criminal acts about that either. These are mostly civil, although maybe some states have some criminal stuff.
Can you just tell us the difference between civil and criminal offenses?
Well, criminal, you're talking about basically taking away somebody's rights by imprisoning them or giving them convicting them of a crime. The civil stuff is basically you're saying that they're liable of they're violating law, but they're not you're not going to take away their rights, the home, happiness. They're not convicted of a crime. It's a lower burden of proof in terms of the evidence. So to convict somebody of a crime, you're talking about beyond a reasonable doubt. Generally speaking, in a civil context, you're talking about substantial evidence or preponderance of the evidence.
OJ was found guilty in the civil case, but not in the criminal case. Is that it?
Yeah. Well, more or less, yeah. There's differences in what he was convicted of, obviously, in both situations. But, it kind of gets to the gist of it.
Yeah, but you see, isn't a civil case a crime? Isn't that a crime as well if they take it to court? It's some kind of offense. You just don't call it a crime?
Yeah, you don't call it a crime, but you can be found guilty. Yeah, of a civil violation, doing something illegal. Yeah.
Okay. Now, did you mention something about Virginia a minute ago when I interrupted you?
Actually, the person who wrote this, it wasn't referring to Virginia in the state sense. They were talking about like that old cliche. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
Oh,
that's the context they meant. But they were also talking.
Virginia was the girl's name, not the state. But,
yeah. Well, they were talking about in that context. But, so somebody also cited a law, like a California law or California regulation. They were saying that, well, it's a criminal violation. But I looked at that law, and that only applies to public utilities in California. So you can't defraud a California public utility out of money or, intellectual property or something like that. But, that only applies to the public utilities there, so it doesn't apply to other companies. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff was taken out of context or inappropriately applied to different to rusing situations. And it's just the bottom line is that you can't just say rusing is illegal. You can't just say it's going to violate any criminal or civil law without actually looking at which state you're talking about and without actually doing analysis of the actual conduct itself, what the actual misrepresentation, where that leads to. If all you're trying to do is get some information from the company, basically the name, phone number, or try to get to that person, odds are that's not going to be illegal.
Maureen, anything you'd like to say there?
No.
I heard you laughing your head off.
No, that wasn't me.
Can I say thank you? Say thank you, right, Maureen?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, it was very, very helpful, very helpful.
But I
think it was Rayanne before that asked for a website. I put his website up on the recruiting blog's chat window if you want to go look at that question that he was talking about, Rayanne.
I know what question you're talking about.
There was a guy who wrote a comment, and he put this was in March of this year, and this guy put it really well. His name was Bill, and he said this. I'll read what he wrote, and this is really good. Any employee is not entitled to use or disclose the former employer's trade secrets, and the new employer is not entitled to use the employee as a conduit to gain the benefit of the former employer's secrets. In other words, do not hire a competitor's employees if your intention is to put the competitor out of business. Do hire a competitor's employees if your intention is to gain good employees. And as a general rule, that's a pretty good – he summed it up pretty well. I mean, you can't put
that was my explanation on my magic method course.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. So that, magic method.
So that's correct.
Yeah.
I'm relieved to hear that because I come under
really,
so much fire.
That was a really good rule for it, a really good rule to go by. However, I mean, you can't put a competitor out of business, and you can't put a competitor – technically, you could put a competitor out of business by hiring employees. It's how you go about it. If they violate any sort of agreements or are a party to helping the other employee violate the agreement.
Doesn't it have a lot to do with intent?
It has a lot to do with intent, yeah.
Well, how can you prove that? I mean, you bring in the good guys in your industry. They make your
company
easy.
Email trails.
Email's good.
What do you mean? Like, you have to say, I want to get these guys or I want to wipe them out of business?
Basically.
No, actually, it'd be more like, don't worry about the agreement. We'll take care of that part of it. Meaning, don't worry about the non-competition. Don't worry about the confidentiality. Don't worry about the non-solicitation agreement. we'll have our attorneys take care of that. That would be a pretty obvious statement of, you know, intent.
What do you think about that business going on today out in California about the hands-off agreements? Are you familiar with that?
No.
What company was it that the Justice Department is looking into their hiring practices? Because they said they had definite hands-off agreements. We don't go into this company because they don't come into ours, and you know that kind of thing. Can anybody help?
Microsoft Yahoo thing, or
is it Microsoft Yahoo?
Or was it the Google Apple scenario with Eric Schmidt resigning from Google because he was on their board, or resigning from Apple? I mean, Apple's board. And
I'll
saying that
like
we don't
find it here.
We don't actually.
It was about a month or two ago. We were talking about it on the boards.
Okay, no, this wasn't the Google Apple thing.
The argument is
Maureen,
that
what are you talking about, Maureen? Prepare. I have no idea.
I'll find it. I'll come back to you. I'll go look for it now.
What are you talking about,
Maureen? Is your question whether that's legal or not?
My question is, what does he think about that?
About what?
Oh, okay.
All right,
about what?
About companies having.
I have to know.
About companies having. About companies having hands-off agreements, one with the other.
Well,
gentlemen's agreements.
If you actually have an agreement like that, like I know Pepsi and Coke had something like that involved with pilfering employees to basically get the Coca-Cola secret, and Pepsi had a big issue with that a few years ago. I agree with those. I agree if you have
right.
some sort of agreement, a handshake agreement, or a quote-unquote gentleman's agreement, I believe those should be upheld. But if there's no agreements to the contrary, nothing that would prevent it, then, you know, that's fair competition.
Mm-hmm. Unfair competition. Well,
yeah,
that's what the Justice Department is saying.
Can a female enter a gentleman's agreement?
Oh, watch that. Watch that.
Okay, this is a New York Times article.
If she stands to pee.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that.
This is a New York Times article, and it was written on June 4th of this year, and it says, Unwritten Code Rules Silicon Valley Hiring. I'll put the link up in RBC if anybody wants to go look at it. But basically, the first paragraph says, Silicon Valley was abuzz Wednesday with news that the Justice Department had begun an antitrust investigation into the hiring practices of some of the best-known companies in the technology and biotech industries, including Google, Apple, Yahoo, and Genentech. The question being asked most frequently was how the word anti-competitive could possibly be applied to the industry's perpetual fight over talent. But some employment and antitrust lawyers, recruiters, and others said that while Valley companies compete aggressively for top engineers, marketers, and executives, it is not a free-for-all. There's a gentleman's understanding all over the Valley that it's not that you don't hire, it's the process by which you hire, said Randy Commissar.
And actually that relates to the rusing argument, too, or it's analogous because it's not the rusing itself but the way you go about it if you actually, you know, breach a contract or something. A gentleman's agreement could be upheld in court if it equates to something like a practice that's been sort of consecrated over time and everybody adheres to it and now there's a violation. So possibly, yeah, that could lead to antitrust, breaking the antitrust laws. Again, you know, it's a case-by-case thing, but, yeah, it's possibly upholdable in a court of law.
Okay, I'll put the link to the article up in RBC right now. It's there.
Similar to what was
going on. In the chat room. I'm sorry.
Now, similar to what was going on, too, with Google and Apple, with Eric Schmidt resigning from Apple's board because they were concerned about how much interaction Google and Apple's having with one another and are they monopolizing the marketplace and, you know, these types of things. I think the Department of Justice or somebody was looking into that too, which led to Schmidt's resignation from their board, I believe.
Okay, so if a salesperson wants to get through to a buyer and the receptionist keeps blocking him or her out and they use some trick to get into that buyer, that is not illegal. The thing about recruiting is that you are going to hurt the company if you recruit a person, but as Carl said a minute ago, that person is not a slave, so it's not company property that you're taking. So even if you're hurting the company, it's not of no consequence. Is that what you're telling us?
Pretty much, yeah. I would say, you know, in that, yeah, that context, yes. If you change it a little bit to maybe if the company itself says, hey, or the secretary says, don't keep calling. If you call, I'm going to call the police for trespassing because you're violating our property, taking away our time, blah, blah, blah. then the recruiter could have some problems then. Although there wouldn't be like it wouldn't be competition or unfair competition. You know, maybe you could make a better case for trespassing.
I've often wondered about that, about the trespassing issue.
I think you make a better case for trespassing in that context than you could for unfair competition.
You can trespass on the phone?
I'm not positive about that, but I would think that I would think you could, yeah.
Hmm.
Or stalking, like it's similar to the anti-stalking laws.
It doesn't sound like it should be. Anti-stalking is when you're going to assault somebody or something.
Well, there's no intent to assault. Basically, though, I think it's a better case to make that it's trespassing than it is unfair competition to just keep calling. I think it's you could make it possibly a stronger case. Although the unfair competition is probably civil, is violation of civil law, where trespassing is criminal, so you have a higher burden of proof on the trespassing anyway.
I got a question from Twitter. Ask him. This is from Paris22, Paul Paris. Ask him if the company can send cease and assist, I think he means desist, order, against the company for cold calling candidates, especially financial advisors. So that's actually not even talking about rusing. It's just talking about are you allowed to recruit people out of a firm.
But I think you could. I think you can get cease and desist orders against companies for doing that, and then they would be violating an injunction, could potentially be held criminally liable, although it's more likely to be like civil damages. But
Hold on a second. You're saying that they can ban you from calling their employees to recruit them?
Yeah, but also that falls under a different set of laws, too, I believe. And I'm not completely clear on this, but I believe that's under security. Yeah, like in America, in the U.S., that's Securities Exchange Commission rules. There's a lot of different rules that apply to financial institutions.
I don't understand that. Does anybody else know anything about that, recruiters? No? Okay.
I've seen different laws, different set of standards and laws for financial institutions, banking, financial securities type stuff.
Really?
Really.
So if you're recruiting a certain class or a certain sector of financial workers, it could be much more difficult to access them freely than other people?
Yeah, it could be, especially if what you're trying to protect, especially if the defending company, not the defending company, but the company that's trying to protect employees or trying to protect proprietary processes, trading or money management processes that they consider proprietary, and they've actually taken aggressive steps to protect those processes. And therefore, the employees themselves could be bound to, like, non-competes, non-solicitations, or whatever.
Okay.
Understand, too, that the courts do frown upon restricting the movement of employees, but they do also uphold those restrictions when there's, when there's laws, such as like in the financial institutions, the financial, area, or if there's agreements, those types of non-solicitation, non-compete agreements. And the agreements themselves are found to be, I guess for the most part, you would say reasonable.
Anybody else have any questions about ruse calling?
Well, another concern that the Justice Department raised was that it could prevent wages from rising if job movement restriction occurs.
Yeah, again, that's one reason. Another reason why they frown upon it. They're very open to the people being freely, able to move from job to job, state to state for commerce, for work, and they scrutinize the courts in general. Scrutinize very closely these non-compete, non-solicitation agreements, so they have to be very carefully worded. The same with also the dispute, resolving disputes of those agreements. So now a big issue is what if these agreements stipulate mandatory arbitration of disputes? Is the arbitration itself fair? Who bears the burden of the expense? That kind of stuff.
Isn't that best addressed in the agreement itself?
It should be addressed in the agreement, but the agreement itself also has to be. It has to be a fairness component too. You're seeing this in other areas too now, involved with like credit card disputes, where basically credit card companies have in the past forced cardholders, their customers, to basically bear the burden of arbitration, even though the credit card companies themselves fund these arbitration organizations. There's a big dispute about that. So it not only has to be clearly stated in the agreement itself, but the actual language, the substance has to be basically fair, reasonable.
Okay, two more things. Did I ask you if a company can sue a candidate for turning down a job for a bad reason?
Only if generally no, but if they signed an agreement or something and the company relied on that agreement or you know, their promise to take the job and they lost something, maybe they could recover some damages, but they're going to have a hard time proving any damages. And it's going
to, if they invest in a new department that this person is going to run, then they can easily prove it, right?
Yeah, you're talking about somebody like a Michael Jordan or Stephen Hawking type of performer, somebody who's like a real outlier, and basically you've lost something because they decided not to join your organization.
I was really thinking if you can't rule against certain people, now maybe they can't turn you down either for the same reasons, because you're a protected class. What if the employer is a member of a protected class and he or she says, you know what, they don't want to work for me for that reason, because I'm a woman or because I'm a certain minority or because of my sexual orientation or something like that?
Yeah, we haven't evolved or we haven't gotten to that point yet, so that's legal for an employee to say that.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so the candidate can be bigoted, right? It's legal.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay.
Well, by the way, you know where you see the where it comes up a lot about the employee who doesn't want to work for the organization, and that there's actually like some potential dispute with potential legal liability. You see this a lot for some reason with the college football draft or the NFL football draft, where like number one picks don't want to go to a certain team or city. Sometimes you see this with the NBA too, but for some reason that comes to mind where I've seen that more often than in any other industry with the National Basketball Association or the National Football League. And it always becomes like a big issue, like, oh, they don't want to play for Cleveland or they don't want to play for Seattle or something like that. And then you end up with these talks about, well, we're gonna get an injunction against them from entering the draft or from being drafted by any other team because we hold the rights. We hold the draft rights.
Okay, last thing, just I found this curious. You told me that the hot issue in employment law or labor law these days is workplace contentiousness because of the economy.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot, yeah.
Well, want to explain?
Yeah, you're not really necessarily dealing with a protected class there, and it's a softer sort of legal issue because what you're really talking about is there's such a high level of tension right now in most workplaces because of layoffs, the economy, work furloughs, people believing that they're being let go because of age issues due to the aging baby boomer population. And there's just a lot more tension in the workplace right now, and I've seen that with a lot of clients a lot of clients are worried about being held liable for something that they didn't do, much less being held liable for something that they did, that they actually committed or did. So there's a lot of these disputes and fights going on in the workplace now between management and their employees, or in some cases between management and management too.
And that's the end of the show. Charles A. Krugel, K-R-U-G-E-L. He's got a blog. Anything else you want to say, Charles?
No, that's cool.
What's his website?
Charles A. Krugel, K-R-U-G-E-L.